From the first day of the occupation on August 11th, we stood with faith leaders, union leaders.
From Interfaith Alliance, this is The State of Belief. I'm Interfaith Alliance President Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch in New York City.
We stood together as a DC United. And I think that that is really, really critical for our movement, that we stand together in that way.
Home rule has always been a sore spot for Washington, D.C. leaders and residents. But that's nothing compared to the unprecedented federal takeover we've seen in the past 4 weeks, based on trumped-up claims of crime out of control that ignore the significant decreases in recent years, as well as far worse numbers in red states like Louisiana. This week, we'll get into all of that with Kaya Chatterjee, co-founder and executive director of the grassroots organization Free DC. We need these voices to be heard now more than ever. Make sure you subscribe, share, and rate The State of Belief at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Taking a minute to do these things really helps other people discover our show and become listeners too. Our library of past conversations includes almost 150 hopeful, empowering, and inspiring interviews with guests like Bishop William Barber, Imam Abdullah Tepli, Representative Eric Swalwell, Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, and many others. You can help grow The State of Belief with a financial contribution right now. Find out how at stateofbelief.com, and you can support and join the work of Interfaith Alliance at interfaithalliance.org. Before we get to my interview with Kaya Chatterjee, I wanted to introduce another voice to you. His name is Reverend Andrew Andy Oliver, pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida. He and another pastor were praying at a Black History Matters mural at the Woodson African American Museum. The mural, like so many others, was about to be destroyed. Here's Andy to talk about what happened and why it matters so much that he showed up.
I was sitting at home and saw a picture posted on Facebook of the Florida Department of Transportation preparing to erase a mural outside our city's African-American History Museum, the Carter G. Woodson Museum. And I felt compelled to reach out to a few people to make sure it was okay. And I called another pastor, and we went out there, and we knelt on the mural, and we prayed.
All across Florida, there are symbols of diversity and the richness of community that are being painted over, erased. This is part of a broader campaign.
Yeah, our governor, Ron DeSantis, decided that rainbows and murals toward Black Lives Matter or just about justice in general needed to be erased. And to do so, he said, well, I'll just erase all the murals. So even the ones that are just art are getting erased all over the state. It's been part of a ongoing systemic cruelty that our governor has been doing all across the state.
It's very connected in my mind to the censorship of books. I mean, it's like whose stories matter, whose lives matter, who matters. You said you were compelled. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a very strong word. And I want to linger there for a second, because I think that's where a lot of us are. What will it take? And how will we get up and show up in moments that matter?
Yeah, I'm a pastor who's a white, straight, cisgender male. I have the most privilege of most people that I come in contact with. And I felt compelled to use my privilege in that moment to be in solidarity with those in our state and in my local community who are feeling erased. When murals are erased that represent inclusion and equity, it feels personal, right? Because it is personal. You know, while our governor is erasing a mural on a street outside African American History Museum, he's also erasing the ways that African American history is taught in our state and teaching it in some pretty incorrect ways, harmful ways. And so this isn't just about murals, right? This is about, again, a system of harm. I've had trans people in my congregation erased, needing to flee the state in order to provide health care for their children. Or for them themselves as adults. This is increasingly not a safe state for people to live in. And so as someone who has a lot of privilege, my faith compels me to put my very body on the line. Sure, there might be consequences, but, you know, my grandmother taught me there's some things worse than facing consequences. And in this moment, it would have been not doing anything.
You have spoken compellingly about how you understand the relationship between the law and faith and what it means to be a religious leader today. Can you talk a little bit about that in the face of all that your congregation is experiencing right now?
Yeah, first of all, the vows taken at my baptism and the vows I took at ordination compel me to resist evil, injustice, and oppression in whatever forms they present themselves. And so that means sometimes to resist the law. You know, history teaches us, the very history of that Black History Matters mural, it teaches us that to obey the law is not always to be faithful, and then to be faithful is not always to be lawful. Dr. King taught us that, right, in his letter that he wrote to us from a Birmingham jail, that an unjust law is no law at all. And I've had people in my life that have invested in me throughout my ministry that have taught me that when injustice is happening and I have the ability, I need to put my body in the way.
This is a really important time for religious folks, especially religious leadership. It feels like a test. Where are we going to put our energies and our solidarity? And you've shown us a really important way forward. And I really applaud you and the other minister who did it. And hopefully we'll have a chance to hear more from you and your work in Florida in the future.
Absolutely. And I really want to reiterate that this is not a story about me. This is something much bigger. And I want to center in this moment the Carter G. Woodson Museum in St. Petersburg and encourage people to support it so that history can be told in even bolder ways that will inform how we live in the present and into the future.
And now to my guest. Kea Chatterjee is the co-founder and executive director of Free DC, a civic campaign defending Washington, D.C.'s home rule and protecting the civil liberties and democratic dignity of its residents. That sounds like something we need to hear about right now. Kea has an impressive background in social and climate justice, having previously led the U.S. Climate Action Network, worked at World Wildlife Federation, USAID, and NASA. Under her leadership, Free DC has become a prominent voice opposing federal overreach, a very big job indeed in the face of the Trump administration's forcing federal law enforcement on the district and expanding detention powers. Free DC is forging powerful alliances around this urgent cause, and I am very happy that the executive director, Kea Chatterjee, is with me today on The State of Belief. Kea, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Could you have imagined this a year ago? Was this something that you were in some ways predicting, or how has this hit you, and how has Free DC been preparing for this moment?
Yeah, unfortunately, we have been very aware that this was coming for a long time, and partly because we were listening to the stump speeches that Trump was giving on the campaign trail, and he was saying repeatedly that he wanted to take over DC, and we are very much students of authoritarianism and dictatorships, and you know, looked and saw like, oh, well, dictatorships, of course, they want to control dissent in the Capitol, because dissent is in the Capitol is what requires them to leave office when their time comes, for example. And we know that this particular regime already tried to use violence to not allow a transfer of power in the Capitol. And so we were very, very aware that this was coming. We launched in January, just before the inauguration, and have been training thousands of people since then in preparation for this moment and more, because it has been, you know, telegraphed what it was they're planning to do. You know, when they say things like, we're going to have Trump 2028 and you'll never have to vote again and third term, all these things are things that we took seriously from the beginning and have been preparing for.
Thank you for saying that. It really is one of those things. Just listen to what they're saying and believe them has been like really a theme.
Yeah.
Believe them. These are not rhetorical flourishes. These are actually what they're planning. That has been the same in the religion community. Like when he's talking to Christians, say, we will be your retribution. That is something that's signaling how you're going to approach religion in your second term. Believe them, and you believe them. And so how did Free DC start? You mentioned in January, but what was the genesis of Free DC?
Well, it emerged from work that we have three other co-founders of Free DC, and it emerged from work that they were leading on in 2023. So in 2023 was the first time that we had a law that was a DC law that was overturned by Congress. That doesn't happen in other cities. That doesn't happen in other states that Congress overturns their laws. And we have something called the Home Rule Act. We don't have statehood in DC because of a legacy of slavery. I think that's one important thing for people to understand. This is about a legacy of racism. The civil rights era and the incredible leaders we had during the civil rights movement, who were the originators of the Free DC movement, Marion Barry, Julius Hobson, so many others. These are figures that through the civil rights era fought for voting rights for the people of DC. And what they got was what we call limited home rule and the Home Rule Act of 1973 that went into effect in 1974. So in 2023, it was the first time Congress overturned a DC law. And unfortunately, lots of Democrats went along with it, and even President Biden signed it. And this was a full-on attack on democracy in DC, because they were overturning our laws that our legislators pass in a body, Congress, where we have no representation. So once that happened, Hands Off DC emerged, and that was a defensive campaign. In the run-up to this Trump 2.0 regime, we realized that we couldn't just have a defensive campaign that said hands off, that we actually needed to have a vision for the future, a vision for liberation, and a vision that completed that journey that the civil rights leaders of the 1960s began and brought us to equal representation for the people of DC, that brought us to liberation for the people of DC. And so we picked up the mantra and the campaign that was started by Mayor Marion Barry of a demand for a free DC. So it was very much anchored in the history of activism in DC, but also in the very, very recent history of having our democracy attacked, even by people who some might be surprised to find were attacking DC's democracy.
We need to take a quick break, but up next, much more with Kaya Chatterjee. You're listening to The State of Belief, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance.